from deep inside your radio.
From New Orleans, the city that made my ears ring. And yes, Rocket Productions, I'm talking about you. Ladies and gentlemen, some media notes at the start of the broadcast. First of all, it is now clear, if there was any doubt before, that Jon Stewart is one of the most influential voices in American media. A few years ago, he denounced Crossfire, the CNN. He's on the right, she's on the left, she's on the left, he's on the right show as a disgrace. And this week, CNN announced it's putting Crossfire back on the air. Good work, John. I haven't done any Los Angeles dog trainer corrections for a while because there hasn't been a real good howler until this one from April 5th. An article in the April 4th LAT Extra section. Yes, there's extra section in the LA dog trainer because the rest of it's been so slimmed down. About negotiation to transfer LA Ontario International Airport from an authority in Los Angeles to one in San Bernardino, Riverside counties, said that the airport was 37 miles west of downtown Los Angeles. The correction continues. It is 37 miles east. By the way, LA Times, get a map. You'll see the 37 miles west of downtown Los Angeles would be an extremely wet location for an airport. But it would increase the dolphin population of the airport tremendously. And that's good for tourism. Now, ladies and gentlemen, one more journalism. Journalism, did I say? News media note. And this concerns a story that came out earlier this week. You know, if you're a regular listener to this broadcast, that we often discuss the findings of inspectors general in various departments of the federal government. And so one of these made national news this week. The inspector general of HUD came out with a report about the money that was the federal government sent to the state of Louisiana, which the state of Louisiana then disbursed to homeowners for the razing of their homes in the wake of the flood caused by the failure of the federal flood control system, hurricane protection system built by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The point of the inspector general's report, according to ABC News, a report that was picked up by a number of other media, including blogs that kind of make a habit of attacking New Orleans and Louisiana. The point of the inspector general's report was that $700 million in this money was, quote, unaccounted for, unquote. Now, that sounds bad. That sounds like absconding. That sounds like those, well, you know, I live here much of the year. And I don't find money that I give to people is absconded with normally. So I scratched my head a little bit about that item until I read coverage in the New Orleans Times, sometimes Picayune, our daily three-day-a-week newspaper. It took a while for it to come out, but the news breaks slowly here. So anyway, here is what that newspaper reported regarding the findings of the inspector general. About 85% of the homeowners who received these grants to raise their homes, quote, either had not completed the work, failed to respond to a survey, or didn't provide supporting documentation, unquote. It's a little different from unaccounted for. Those criminals who don't complete a survey, what kind of citizens are those? Later in the story, a Louisiana state official said that in many cases, this was a matter of homeowners lacking one of a set of documents, just like one final document had not been submitted as of the date that they reported to HUD. But that results in $700 million unaccounted for, ladies and gentlemen. And speaking of money, but more people get their news from ABC than is good for a healthy democracy. All right, we follow the dollar. And in case you wonder what too big to fail really means, Here's a British report on Barclays Bank, the UK's second largest lender by assets. It is too complex to manage, with a culture that rewarded sales at the expense of clients. This is a report commissioned by the bank. It paid its top 70 executives consistently and significantly above the industry norm, with bonuses at the investment bank incapable of justification. That's from a report the bank commissioned. How bad do you think the situation really is? But of course, that's British banks. They do something like that. Thank God American banks wouldn't commission a report like that. Also on the money tip, Europe's financial crisis is costing lives, with suicides and infectious diseases on the rise. Yet politicians are not addressing the problem. Health experts said this week, deep budget cuts and growing unemployment are tipping more people into depression, and falling incomes mean fewer people can see their doctors or afford to buy medicines. See Greece, where hospitals have run out of medicines long since. The result has been a reversal since 2007 of a long-term decline in suicide rates, coupled with worrying outbreaks of diseases, including HIV and even malaria in Greece, according to a major analysis of European health in the journal The Lancet. That's a major British medical journal. Countering these threats requires strong social protection schemes, argue the researchers, but the austerity measures imposed after a string of crises in southern Europe, most recently Cyprus, has shredded social safety nets. Quote, there's a clear problem of denial of the health effects of the crisis, even though they're very apparent, says lead researcher Martin McKee of the European Observatory on Health Systems and Policies, a group backed by that socialist outfit, the World Health Organization. The European Commission has a treaty obligation to look at the health effect of all of its policies, but has not produced any impact assessment on the health effects of the austerity measures imposed by the so-called Troika, the European Commission, the European Central Bank, and the IMF, according to McKee. McKee said the failure of the European governments and the European Commission to face up to the health consequences of their policies was reminiscent of the obfuscation of the tobacco industry over smoking. The case of Iceland, however, suggests there is an alternative despite its devastating financial crisis. Iceland rejected austerity following a referendum, instead continued to invest in its social welfare system. As a result, the researchers found there had been no discernible effects on health since the crisis, and in fact, Iceland's recovery has now returned to growth. But the recovery is patchy, unlike ours, and inflation has remained stubbornly high. The new F-bomb, while we're at it, the Obama administration is engaged in a broad push to make more home loans available to people with weaker credit. That couldn't possibly go wrong. This is an effort that officials say will help power the economic recovery. Skeptics say it could open the door to risky lending that caused the housing crash in the first place. Who do you think's right? The president's advisors say the housing rebound is leaving too many people behind, including young people looking to buy their first homes and individuals with credit records weakened by the recession. So administration officials say they're working to get banks to lend to a wider range of borrowers by taking advantage of taxpayer-backed programs that insure home loans against default. We already insure 90% of the home mortgages out there. Why not dig deeper? But the banks have the answer this time around to prevent a new F-bomb. And this report comes courtesy of Rupert Murdoch's very own Wall Street Journal, which, by the way, I did not pay to read. As the market for private residential mortgage-backed securities shows signs of life, J.P. Morgan Chase and others want a new practice as they start to do this deal again where they're going to package mortgages. As again, I didn't pay for this, Ruby.
I'd hate to call you a liar, but I don't believe you.
Well, I didn't. The new practice is to include time and other restrictions in the representations and warranties that assure investors of the quality of the loans in the securities they buy. Limitations on the assurances to investors. Some limits to the periods where investors can demand lenders or the investment bank repurchase faulty loans. Banks have already paid billions of dollars over alleged, according to the Wall Street Journal, breaches of reps and warranties on subprime and other non-guaranteed loans issued in the last bubble. The new restrictions are an effort to avoid legal battles if the real estate market collapses again. So you see how the banks are being prudent? They'll make the crappy loans, but this time they'll keep you from suing them. Hello, welcome to the show.
No, I laughed all day.
From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain, the over-engineered edge of Lake Pontchartrain, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, news from outside the bubble. From the British newspaper The Independent on Sunday, hitherto unseen evidence given to the Chilcot inquiry that was looking into the Iraq War by British intelligence has revealed that former Prime Minister Tony Blair was told that Iraq had, at most, only a trivial amount of weapons of mass destruction, and that Libya was, in this respect, a far greater threat. Intelligence officers have disclosed that just the day before Blair went to visit President George Bush in April 2002, he appeared to accept this, but returned a changed man. That he subsequently ordered the production of dossiers to, quote, find the intelligence, unquote, that he wanted to use to justify going to war. This will be used as the basis for severe criticism of the former prime minister when and if the Chilcot report is published. Blair is said to have realized and understood that Libya was the real threat and that he knew it would not be sensible to lead the argument on Saddam and the WMD issues, according to evidence of a conversation on April 4th, the day before he flew to the U.S. to spend a weekend with Bush. This was disclosed in a closed evidence session with one of MI6, the British version of the CIA's most senior officers, states that Blair realized that the WMD threat from Libya was more serious than from Iraq. Blair had that meeting the day before he visited Bush's ranch. What is clear is that he was told in 2002, British intelligence discovered that Libya has an active nuclear weapons program, according to the then head of MI6. By contrast, Iraq had no nuclear weapons, and any actual WMD would be very, very small and would fit on the back of a gasoline truck, according to a senior MI6 official. They admitted the danger from WMB was, quote, all in the cranium of just a few scientists who we never did meet and we have been unable to meet ever since, unquote. Yet the weekend at Crawford, Texas in April 2002 marked Blair's conversion to Bush's way of thinking. Blair and Bush on Friday, April 5th, spent the evening alone without their advisors. By the end of the weekend, Blair appeared to be a changed man, where previously he had said, quote, we don't do regime change, unquote, according to the former chief of the defense staff. Top secret British government papers suggesting the two leaders had made a pact to act against Iraq have been given to the inquiry by a former, or actually by a current member of parliament. The document was leaked to him after the invasion. He says, his name is Elfin Lloyd, it was quite clear that the deal had been struck firmly that weekend, and the wording was quite unambiguous. There's no doubt that that weekend saw Blair decide to go to war. The former prime minister, says this member of parliament, quote, had his head turned and was starstruck by Bush, unquote. Imagine being starstruck by Bush. I can understand being starstruck by Paul Wolfowitz, but before the middle of 2002, Iraq had been relatively low down the scale of preoccupations in terms of WMD, and according to another MI6 officer in evidence to the inquiry. But in the months after Blair's return from Texas, the Secret Services came under pressure to come up with intelligence to support a move to war. Says another officer of MI6, those of us who'd been around knew perfectly well what a disaster for countless people a war was going to be. Another officer of the agency described the handling of Curveball, the Iraqi source whose claims of mobile chemical weapons labs were subsequently exposed as lies, and the marketing of the intelligence as, quote, awful. Not O-F-F-A-L, A-W-F-U-L. But, you know, either one works. Either one is good. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And we move now to something that's clean, cheap, and safe. Friend Addy the Atom is with us. Addy?
Yes, I am.
You're good?
Very good. Very good. Every particle is charged.
Every particle is charged. That's good news. First from Hanford, where we've been trying to dismantle the detritus of 50 years of making nuclear weapons. Hanford in Washington. A television station there, King News, has learned there's been a series of unexpected hydrogen gas releases from a tank holding radioactive waste at Hanford.
You had an unexpected gas release.
Stop it. Confidential sources say it began on March 16th and lasted for several days, much longer than usual, and they worry a single spark could have set off an explosive release of radioactivity. This comes 3 days after a report by a government panel that expressed concerns about the release of flammable gases at Hanford and the government's inability to respond to them. Why would that be? Confidential sources and government representatives are giving dramatically different versions of what has happened. Both agree a million-gallon tank holding nuclear waste at Hanford did indeed have a buildup of hydrogen gas. But after that, accounts differ. Confidential sources discussed by the television station say it was of a magnitude larger than anything teams there have seen in at least 2 years, and burped days longer than normal.
Well, you did that to stop.
Just don't. As we mentioned, those underground tanks that hold a stew of toxic radioactive waste in Hanford pose a possible risk of explosion, according to a nuclear safety board. So, no immediate
cause of for concern.
That's right. No immediate cause of concern. A species of shellfish has disappeared along an 18-mile stretch of coast near Japan's devastated Fukudaiichi nuclear plant. Scientists say researchers from Japan's National Institute for Environmental Studies and National Institute of Radiological Studies, hey, they should get together, found a species of shellfish known as Thais clavigera was extinct in 8 of 10 places within the 12-mile radius alert zone of the nuclear plant. Other shellfish...
You want my teeth?
No.
I don't have any.
Shellfish species were found in the alert zone, but their numbers had declined and high levels of radioactive materials were detected in them.
It's not kosher anyway.
It's not kosher anyway. You were correct. Lead researcher Toshihiro Horiguchi said the disappearance of Thais clavigera was likely a result of radiation from the damaged plant.
It's hot shellfish.
It is hot shellfish. You were right. More news from Fukushima, however you would like me to. I'll say it however you want, ladies and gentlemen. I am at your disposal. And it looks good in there. As much as 120 tons of radioactive water may have leaked from a storage tank at Japan's crippled Fuk nuclear plant, contaminating the surrounding ground. That's according to TEPCO. The power company has yet to discover the cause of the leak, detected on one of seven tanks that store water used to cool the plant's reactors. Well, nothing could happen.
Not immediate danger, Dale.
No, says a spokesman for the company. The company plans to pump 13,000 cubic meters of water remaining in the tank to other vessels over the next 2 weeks, because those tanks couldn't possibly leak. Water from the leaking tank, located 800 meters from the coast, is not expected to reach the sea, according to the Kyoto News Service, citing unidentified officials from the utility. Well, they should know. The company did not say how long the tank had been leaking. How could you possibly know something like that?
Wear a wristwatch.
Good. And more bad news about the cooling systems at the facility, at the Fuk facility, which hold the rods, the storage pool for fuel. The fuel pool cool story. The cooling system for a storage pool for fuel at one of the reactors at Fuk failed this week for the second time in a month, although there was no immediate danger from the breakdown.
Of course not.
The Nuclear Regulation Authority spokesman said an alarm went off about the problem at reactor number 3. The cause is still under investigation. You may remember a plant had a cooling system failure earlier this year, a couple weeks ago, as a matter of fact, which had been attributed to the presence of a rat. The cooling system can be off for 2 weeks before temperatures approach dangerous levels at the spent fuel storage pools, according to TEPCO. But if the water runs dry, the fuel rods, even spent ones, will emit enormous levels of radiation, according to the Associated Press. Associated Press doesn't use the word enormous that enough. You have nothing to say about that.
I don't read the Associated Press.
Okay. Last month, that power outage led to a cooling system not working for 2 days, as we said, because of the rat. And Dateline, New York, Pennsylvania. 3 Mile Island. That's a memory jogger, if ever there was one. Could face additional federal inspections. Oh, no. Stemming from an apparent violation that involved missing seals. No. These aren't the the fish-eating ones, needed to protect the plant against a major flood. Last August, both 3 Mile Island and Nuclear Regulatory Commission officials discovered couplings and electrical cable conduits were missing flood seals, according to a spokesman for 3 Mile Island.
They have their own spokesman, see? They're complete.
They are. For the past 2 years, 3 Mile Island has worked to enhance its flood protection systems. It was during these efforts that the issue with the missing seals were found, said the spokesman. We found that these seals were not there. He almost sounds proud of the fact that they found that. The missing seals would have led to the flooding of plant safety-related equipment and various emergency core cooling systems if 3 Mile Island was in a flood that was worse than any on record. The floodwaters wrought by Tropical Storm Agnes in 1972 stand as a benchmark for what the Nuclear Regulatory Commission defines as a probable maximum flood. You couldn't possibly have anything stronger than what happened in 1972.
You can take that to the bank.
You can. If it's J.P. Morgan. In addition, the plant would have shut down if the Susquehanna River had approached flood levels equivalent to Tropical Storm Agnes, but the spokesperson for Three Mile Island says, reassuringly, the river doesn't flood that quickly. Always looking out for you, ladies and gentlemen. Clean, cheap, too safe to even think about. Our friend, the Adam. Eddie, thank you. Lovely to have you in our facility today. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your listening
pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, we are proud to present Let Us Try, a ballad of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
It's a ballad.
Let us try to stem the tide.
It's a ballad to the head. News of the Army Corps, ladies and gentlemen. DynCorp International's agreement with the Army Corps of Engineers over disputed work in Afghanistan wasn't a settlement. It was a mugging, according to the U.S. watchdog of wartime spending in Afghanistan.
We can help.
Yes, they can help. John Sopko, the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, commented in response to findings by the Corps that a $73 million payment to the contractor, DynCorp, for engineering work on a garrison was proper and reasonable. Sopko said the government freed DynCorp from responsibility while long-standing deficiencies remained. He had asked the Corps of Engineers to justify the settlement. Even though, quote, the process followed was inconsistent with Corps policy, there was sufficient information to believe that the final negotiated modification was the best course of action, said the deputy commander of the Corps Transatlantic Division. Sopko, who heads this independent agency to monitor U.S. spending in Afghanistan, rejected that conclusion. The Corps' own internal review says they didn't make DynCorp pay to fix their shoddy construction. They didn't collect the liquidated damages that DynCorp owned them, and they violated their own settlement policies. But they still think the settlement was proper and reasonable, said Sopko. That wasn't a settlement. It was a mugging. We want to make sure that someone is held accountable and taxpayers are made whole, he said. The garrison construction, supervised by DynCorp, was part of the U.S. effort to train and house the Afghan army. Army Corps spokesman Michael Beeman said the agency took Sopko's concerns regarding the final modification to the contracts very seriously. Yep. They're laughing all the way to the seriousness. And the last shoe dropped this week. We now learned that LSU, Louisiana State University, spent close to $1 million to wage its battle against former head of the LSU Hurricane Center, Ivor Van Heerden, over his claims that senior university officials destroyed his career after he criticized the Army Corps of Engineers for their role in the causation of the 2005 flooding of New Orleans. They paid him $435,000, that amount now public, in the settlement, and they paid a Baton Rouge law firm more than that, almost $500,000 over 2.5 years to defend the university. In the lawsuit, not included in the documents was information on other expenses the university incurred in its battle with Van Heerden to oppose his criticism of the United States Army Corps of Engineers. And, ladies and gentlemen, on another subject, we learned this week that at least one of the rumors swirling around the circular firing squad that is the National Broadcasting Company turned out to be true. Matt Lauer will not be replaced by Anderson Cooper, at least not yet. But Jay Leno will be, once again, leaving The Tonight Show, this time to be replaced by Jimmy Fallon, and the show will be moved to New York. Now, the press accounts say that's because Jimmy's a New York guy. What they don't say, well, one mentioned it, is that the show will now be produced, The Tonight Show will now be executive produced, because they're firing the executive producer as well as Jay Leno, by the executive producer of Jimmy Fallon's current show, Late Night, Lorne Michaels. And Lorne Michaels lives in New York. Jay said he'll be going on the road as a working comedian, so you can look for the funny newspaper ads and headlines that are too blue to be on television in Las Vegas very soon. But Lorne Michaels taking over The Tonight Show proves, ladies and gentlemen, that if you're nice and treat people fairly, good things happen to you.
thought I was winning the game. You came and snuffed out the flame. You thought you'd finish me off, but you just made me strong. Each time you dealt me a blow, each time you brought me so low, I found something inside to help me along.
least that's what we tell the children. This is Le Show from New Orleans. And ladies and gentlemen, what the frack? That's the question at hand. The fracking boom in shale gas has hurt the demand for energy-efficient green technologies. If your response to that assertion is Bosch, that's correct. The chairman of Bosch, the world's largest auto, one of the world's largest auto parts suppliers, the German firm, he told that to a German newspaper. It recently decided to discontinue its photovoltaic solar energy activities at the cost of 3,000 jobs, due largely but not entirely to a glut in capacity built up in China. Photovoltaic is going through a unique transition, he says, but you cannot entirely dismiss that the use of energy-efficient technologies came under pressure through fracking in the United States. The longer availability of fossil fuels naturally has an effect on the economic calculation of resource-friendly technologies, he explained. And while that's going on in Germany, what's happening in France? When is fracking not fracking, is the question being asked there, according to Bloomberg. The country is pushing ahead with plans to harness geothermal energy. Now, during the week, this is nutty, because during the week I was thinking about all the stories that I share with you about nuclear and the petroleum leaks and fracking, thinking, well, whatever happened to that old geothermal thing? Because solar and wind have their own problems, and geothermal seemed kind of easy. We are on the thin crust of a molten planet. There's a lot of heat down there. Just tap it. Boil some water. Spend the rest of the day on the couch watching TV. Okay, but here's what France is actually doing. They're using drilling methods that the oil industry says are like hydraulic fracturing or fracking, which France outlawed in 2011. Environment Minister Delphine Bathot gave two geothermal exploration licenses this year. More are in review. Some will permeate rock using a process called stimulation. It's just stimulation. It's like, you know, some perky music that blasts acid and water into fissures to release volcanic heat. Similar to how U.S. engineers use chemical cocktails to fracture fossil fuels from shale rock. The government grew enthusiastic about generating power from underground heat reservoirs to lower dependence on atomic power, but it banned fracking for its, quote, serious health and environmental risks and canceled shale exploration licenses. Granting geothermal exploration firm permits is creating a double standard, says Jean-Louis Chilansky, head of Union Française des Industries Pétrolières, the group that's pushing for a review of the shale restrictions. The drilling methods are similar, he says. So, France is fracking for geothermal, is the claim. It's just stimulation. They're just stimulating the rocks. Here, read some interesting books. Authorities are investigating. Oh, leaks of the week, ladies and gentlemen, will be coming your way shortly, speaking of energy. But now, what seemed like it was a big story at the beginning of the week was not mentioned on any of the Sunday Yak shows. But that's understandable, because they had to make room for John McCain and Chuck Schumer. What else are they going to do on Sunday? The story was about the cheating by Atlanta school teachers. A scathing report issued about it. Former Atlanta school superintendent Beverly Hall knew about the cheating accusations on a standardized test and either ignored them or tried to hide them. The report stated the changing of answers was often done at weekend gatherings or so-called erasure parties, where the teachers would erase the wrong answers and replace them with the right ones. The report stated children were denied special educational assistance because their falsely reported test scores were too high. And during testing, teachers pointed to the correct answer while standing at students' desks. They found cheating at 44 of 56 schools they examined. Investigators found that 178 teachers and principals cheated. 82 of those confessed to misconduct. The report uncovered cheating in 78% of these Atlanta city schools that were examined. 67% of Atlanta public school principals probed were directly involved with or responsible for cheating, said the Atlanta mayor. Today is a dark day for the Atlanta public school system. There's no doubt that systemic cheating occurred on a widespread basis in the school system. And there are reports that, now the point of this story is, of course, that schools feel under pressure because under the No Child Left Behind system, they get financially penalized if they don't do well on standardized tests. And there are at least some reports that the cheating is not limited to Atlanta.
Standing in a classroom, a big sit on your ass room, trying to reach 3:30 in one piece. You're supposed to do some teaching. Those kids you just ain't reaching. You might as well work for the police. For the police. Oh, the board's got you competing. Parents think you're cheating. You're paid for 12. Only work for 9. When time comes for testing, be smart and do the best thing. No need to put your butt up on the line. Up on the line. Send the slow ones home. Make the bright ones stay. Give the answers away if you're so inclined. Make your test scores rise. Be a hero in their eyes. Little thing called, no teacher left behind. Mm-hmm. Little thing called, no teacher left behind. No teacher left behind. Now it's race to pure futility, and you got to keep the shooters out till 4. Keep them out till 4. You could have been a doctor, but now tests you got to proctor. Retirement's a glittering mirage. So cast aside your doubt, babe. You're done doing without, babe. Let that pre-owned hybrid live in your garage. In your garage, send the slow ones home, make the bright ones stay, give the answers away, then you just unwind, make your test scores rise, be a hero in their eyes, little thing called, no teacher left behind, that's right, little thing called. No teacher left behind. No teacher left behind.
Behind, no teacher left behind. behind, no one behind.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the weak and the strong.
We're so sorry.
For example, Barack Obama has been criticized for remarks about California Attorney General Kamala Harris. He has now apologized to the Attorney General for remarking on her looks during a fundraising trip. White House spokesman Jay Carney said Obama did not want to, quote, diminish the accomplishments and capabilities of Kamala Harris, an old friend. At the fundraiser, Obama said Harris was, quote, by far the best-looking attorney general in the country, referring to her as brilliant, dedicated, tough, and exactly what you'd want in anybody who was administering the law. Carney said Obama apologized for creating the distraction with the comments about her looks. They're old friends, good friends. He did not in any way want to diminish the attorney general's accomplishments. He fully recognizes the challenges women continue to face in the workplace, and they should not be judged based on appearance. But he does admire her rack. No, he did not say that. Sorry. Sorry about the sorry. She, by the way, was one of the attorneys general who was holding out on the settlement with the banks and then stopped holding out. Dateline Shanghai, with its rare apology, Apple went from pariah to praiseworthy in the eyes of Chinese state-controlled media this week, a lesson for other foreign firms not to underestimate the speed and power of the government press. After coming under near daily media assault for the past 2 weeks and facing the threat of penalties from two Chinese government bureaus, Apple apologized to Chinese consumers this week for poor communication over its warranty policy and said it will change the terms for some of its iPhones sold in China. Apple's second biggest and fastest growing market. Chinese newspapers that threw brickbats at Apple a few days ago have since changed their tune. From a time when they described Apple as having unparalleled arrogance, they now describe Apple as conscientiously responding to consumers' demands. See what an apology can do? Rick Ross has apologized for a controversial lyric that has been interpreted as condoning rape on his track UOENO. He tweeted, "I don't condone rape. Apologies for the lyric interpreted as rape." Last week, the rapper appeared on a New Orleans radio station in an attempt to clear up the rhyme. During the interview, Ross said it was a misunderstanding with the lyric, a misinterpretation with the term rape wasn't used. "I would never use the term rape in my records." Still, the criticism continued to mount, with many underwhelmed by his original apology. Rapper Talib Kweli called Ross, quote, "a misguided 40-year-old person," unquote, saying he condoned rape in that song and he shouldn't, and he should apologize, and the apology that he offered was unacceptable. Controversy has begun to affect Ross's endorsement deals. That's enough of me pretending to care about Rick Ross. Dateline Manassas, Virginia, restaurant in Manassas apologized to some police officers for refusing to serve them because they were carrying guns. Police officers carrying guns. The eight were asked to leave a Buffalo Wild Wings because of the restaurant chain's no guns policy. Not a no-bun policy, a no-gun policy. The restaurant officials say the officers were not in uniform, but were wearing badges. The restaurant says there's no question both the waitress and manager knew they were cops. Because they look like cops. They talk like cops. So to apologize, the restaurant has pledged to donate 10% of sales to the nonprofit Law Enforcement United, a charity that helps the children of fallen officers. Police have accepted the apology. The Tampa Bay Rays, a Major League Baseball team, have apologized for what the team described as a lapse in judgment by a club mascot, photographed holding an inappropriate sign making reference to Steve Irwin, that popular Australian television personality and wildlife expert who died in 2006 after being attacked by a stingray. The furry mascot of the Tampa Bay Rays, known as Raymond, was handed a Rays to-do list by a fan during Wednesday night's game against the Baltimore Orioles. How about those birds? The sign had one Steve Irwin crossed off and listed the World Series second. The team issued an apology after a photo of the mascot holding the sign wound up on the internet. The statement said fans are welcome to carry signs that are not offensive into the ballpark, but the club regretted that this particular sign was displayed. Speaking of sports, Rutgers University President Robert Barchi apologized for not firing the school men's basketball coach in December and attempted to answer critics who questioned the leadership amid a scandal that came to light as the school prepares for a massive merger with the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey. Enroll now, won't you? Online? No. Barchi is overseeing that merger. But his first public comments were only part of the drama. It included the resignation of the athletic director and the filing of a wrongful termination lawsuit by a former employee who said he was let go after complaining about Mike Rice, the recently fired head basketball coach, seen on video physically and abusing players. The president of Rutgers said he made a mistake by not viewing that video of Rice pushing players and using anti-gay slurs to taunt them until this week, more than 4 months after it was given to university officials. He viewed the video for the first time on the night before Rice was fired. "I personally apologize to the entire Rutgers community for the negative impact this situation has had on Rutgers," he said. Facebook has apologized to a mother for banning her from its site after she posted pictures of her breastfeeding. Facebook's nudity policy says that family photos of child breastfeeding are allowed, but images where a breast is fully exposed and the child isn't actively nursing are not. We'll trust Mark to decide, won't we? And Houston Astros broadcaster Alan Ashby has apologized for his comments after Yu Darvish lost his perfect game on Tuesday with two outs in the ninth inning. "I'd like to apologize if my comments last night were misinterpreted or construed as insensitive. I have the highest respect for Yu. He's a great player, and his performance last night was outstanding." The comment Ashby made about Darvish was That'll force a guy to learn some of the language here in America as he cursed in the dugout following his removal from the game. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And the League of the Week authorities are investigating after construction crews discovered a problem with a liquid gas pipeline that allowed a carcinogen to seep into the ground near a large creek that feeds into the Colorado River. The leak was discovered largely by accident, even though several state and federal agencies are charged with monitoring gas pipelines in the state. The League of the Week, ladies and gentlemen, soon to be a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com. Available around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com. And another location, too, kcrw.com. Two locations, count them. And available as a podcast for free through kcrw.com, iTunes, and Sideshow Network. And it'd be just like the people responsible for monitoring for pipeline leaks, discovering the leaks. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Already, thank you very much. Uh-huh. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago in exile, and Hawaii desks. Hope the Hawaii desk is not in the wettest spot on Earth. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead, the host of this program, tweets at Twitter. Yes, join the almost 84,000 people who waste their time reading what he tweets. And by he, I mean me. At The Harry Shearer. And the email address for this program and the playlist of the music heard here, available at harryshearer.com, along with a cool store. Just a cool store. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans.